Welcome to episode 616 of the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast, co-hosted by professional film critic Sean Patrick and Jeff Lasseter. Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook at the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast. We're on Instagram at Critics Pod. You can see us over at YouTube at the Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. Subscribe at all your places where you listen and watch and follow us. Be sure to follow, subscribe, all that stuff. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Alexa, all the podcatchers. Rate and review the show. It does help with all the algorithms and fun stuff. Patreon.com/CriticsPod is the best way to help support the podcast. And then our TeePublic link is over at ihatecritics.net. Be sure to read our show notes to get links to Sean's movie reviews and Jeff's art. And without further ado, I'll send you right to the show. Bye. Welcome to the I Hate Critics Movie Review Podcast. I am professional film critic Sean Patrick. With me is Jeff. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
Hi, I'm recovering. How are you?
I'm good. Would you say you're a professional gadfly?
I'm a professional gadabout.
Gadabout. Oh, nice.
I like to call myself a professional artist, but then I also work a retail job. So can the two exist?
I mean, that's most artists, isn't it?
Pretty much. Yeah. Nobody wants to pay for art. I mean, well, realistically,
I can make it with AI. Gosh,
that's like when Josh shared on our page today his Joker 2 poster. I was like, "That's really cool," and he did say it was AI, and I'm like,
"Yeah, thanks, Josh." No, it's actually a pretty cool poster, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're doing it for yourself, I don't care. But if you're like doing it to... When I was at Days of the Dead, there were a few people that were selling some images that were obviously AI generated. And people were like, "Oh my God, how did you do that?" I was walking by a table and the lady was like, "Oh my God, how did you do that?" She goes, "Well, you know, I just had the idea and it just kind of comes out of you." And I walked and I just kind of leaned in and I go, "That's AI. She just typed some stuff into Midjourney and that's what came out." And the lady shot me the look of death.
Fuck that bitch.
And I was like, I go, "Is that what you did?" And she didn't say anything. And the other girl like starts asking me about AI. And I'm like, "Yeah, it's garbage." It all looks the same now. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because so many people are suing these companies to like, so they can't use their art as a prompt, then they're just using the same prompts that they stole from other artists for years. And so it all looks the same. They don't know how to do fingers correctly yet. Like, there's somebody put an image of Trump praying in church. And he's got six fingers on one hand. And I'm like, that would have kept him out of the military, not his bone spurs. But yeah, I mean, it's just, they don't know how to do, you can always tell by hands and crowd scenes. Yeah, it's very, it's just very kind of obvious at this point. To most people. Like, I've got a couple older friends who, you know, they're like, "Oh my God, look at this photograph somebody took of a child and a cat underwater together." I'm like, "No, that's AI." My one friend who is very, he's a really nice guy, but he does not know that it's not photography. He's older and he shared a picture of, I think, a puppy in a champagne glass. And it's so obviously AI. I don't know if this is AI or not. I can't tell anymore. And I'm like, the puppy would die in a champagne glass because his head was down at the bottom. I'm like, if it was a photograph, they killed the dog.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't know.
I hate it. I hate it all, and it needs to go away.
Yes. Everything sucks. And that, and AI just makes it worse.
On the bright side, there are movies.
Well, mostly the bright side.
Mostly. Let's start with the few that I saw that no one else in the world saw, apparently, at least according to the box office. There's a movie called The Listener, directed by Steve Buscemi and starring Tessa Thompson, along with the voice of Rebecca Hall, so at least she was involved in something good this week. We'll get to that. The Listener is about a woman who works at a suicide hotline in the overnight shift, and she spends the night talking to people and trying to convince them to not kill themselves. And this is one of the last COVID movies, I would say, one of the last ones that was made during, you know, the lockdown. You can tell because obviously there's just one actor and just basically the director, and that's it. But this does work. Tessa Thompson is an incredible actress who can really hold the frame by herself. She really doesn't need anybody there with her to make the movie feel dynamic and unique and interesting. She's got a great face. She's got a great voice. And the people that they have her interacting with have got a number of really great actors who are working with her that have dynamic voices of their own. Like I said, Rebecca Hall, who takes up most of the third act with Tessa Thompson, is really great. Is just really, really incredible at communicating emotions in her voice and telling the story that she's telling about this professor who's about to lose her job and who's just lost her marriage and is considering ending it all because she doesn't feel like she has anything left. But she's also just this very erudite, intellectual woman who has a lot going for her, but you know, she just had a run of really terrible luck. That is a very compelling third act conversation that they have. And really overall, just the whole movie is incredibly compelling thanks to Tessa Thompson and Steve Buscemi using just one room, this apartment, to make this movie feel dynamic. He doesn't move the camera a lot, which you would think would make the film feel stagnant, but it doesn't. It still feels dynamic because Tessa Thompson is so very good and these stories that are being told are so compelling.
Is this streaming or was this?
It should be streaming, I believe. I know it was they did a limited theatrical, but I believe it is streaming now.
Okay. It's interesting. I wish I'd known about it. I would have probably tried to see it this week.
It's not a movie that got a lot of attention. I think it's been on the shelf for a little bit because, as I said, this was a COVID lockdown movie. So they've held it off releasing it for a while now.
I just think Tessa Thompson is incredible in almost anything she does.
She is, you know. I thought she made the most of a underwritten role in all three of the Creed films. I thought she was fantastic, and Passing, of course, is a tremendous movie. Mm-hmm. No surprise that she has great chemistry with Rebecca Hall, obviously.
Rebecca Hall has good chemistry. Just about anybody except for CGA and Monsters. And even then, a couple of them are fun. But I mean, that's like a dream cast to me, you know?
just Tessa Thompson?
Well, Tessa Thompson and Rebecca Hall. Seeing them in something, you know, that would, yeah.
I was impressed that there's also Margaret Cho shows up for a voice cameo, Logan Marshall Green.
Buried the lead. I love all these people.
Alia Shawkat shows up as well as a kind of a fun character, like a fun character who's thinking of killing themselves.
Oh, I mean.
How she manages to be both suicidally depressed and still incredibly sarcastic is kind of amazing.
Huh. I mean, that's everybody. I like literally everybody involved in this, and now I have to see it.
I highly recommend The Listener. It's quite good. What's not good is Sean Penn's new movie, Asphalt City, in which he co-stars with Ty Sheridan. They both play EMTs in New York. Ty Sheridan is a rookie. Sean Penn is the longtime veteran. And this is misery porn, Jeff. This is just about the New York is a hellscape where everybody is awful. And there's really not much else to take away from it. Why does anyone want to save anybody in this city if they're just going to find them dead the next day anyway? It's really one of those movies. They just plays out this series of miseries over and over again. It's just punishingly miserable. It wants to be just, it wants to make you mad, I guess. I don't know, or if it wants to make you cry so badly that it just trots out every possible misery, like a crackhead who gives birth to a baby in a homeless shelter where she's locked in a room by herself with just her heroin and this child that she's giving birth to, and then the baby is dead, or is the baby dead? We don't really know. Or did Sean Penn kill the baby because he doesn't see the baby having a good life if he doesn't kill it? That's literally a plot in this fucking movie. It's really garbage. It's just really, truly garbage. They haze this guy, Ty Sheridan's character, they get this call, and they apparently know that what they're doing is going there and picking up essentially a dead, or confirming a dead body that's been there for weeks. And they send him into the room by himself to find this just horrifically desiccated dead body. And this is supposed to be, I guess, the fun and games portion of the movie. I don't know. This is a fucking miserable film.
That sounds just great.
Doesn't that really sound like a movie you want to spend time watching?
You know, like I was thinking the other day, I was very sick over the weekend, like to the point where, you know, deliriously sick. Mm-hmm. And in my moments of lucidity, as I'm just doom scrolling Twitter, and I'm thinking, God, could anything get any worse? And that's exactly the kind of movie I think that would have driven me over the edge at this particular point in the world history. You know, and maybe it's because I'm old. I turned 52 this month, and I'm trying mm-hmm. to look for good stuff.
Yeah.
Because everything is so dark. It's an election year in the United States, and that sucks every yeah. year. It's like gets worse and worse and worse. You know, we've got our government doesn't know how to like take care of its problems, and I'm just looking for something good to see, to like lift my spirits. And
right.
it's stuff like that. Let's go find a dead body. You know, it's like, it's not Stand By Me kind of let's go look at a dead body. Where it's, no, you know, not discovering.
Has no idea. He has no idea he's even going in there to find a dead body. This yeah, is like, you know, it's a clever little bit of hazing that they're doing.
I mean, just come on.
It's goddamn miserable. And it's like the movie about people who are suicidally depressed is not as nearly as depressing as this piece of shit.
I'm glad I picked the classic that we're doing this week. I'm just going to say that. That's a little preview for people, but
we'll get there. But the only thing that's remotely good about this is the fact that Mike Tyson is in this movie and he's not playing Mike Tyson. He actually plays the head of the EMTs. He's Sean Penn's boss.
Oh my God.
And watching Mike Tyson just try to be a regular guy is very funny to me. It just stands out as the only kind of moment of levity is the couple of scenes where Mike Tyson, like, he brings Sean Penn in his office and threatens to take his badge away. Too out of control as an EMT.
Oh, God.
This movie, I think this movie is why the people in the listener are so suicidally depressed, is they watched this movie.
Like, if it was Memento, if it was told Memento style, like, it would go backwards in all their stories. And then they'd have each one of them picking up the Blu-ray disc of that movie.
Yeah.
And then like calling her.
Yeah. Asphalt City. That's the movie. And directed by Jean-Stéphane Salvaire.
Sounds like Ass Hat City is more.
Hated it. Hated it a lot. You know what I thought I was going to hate though, Jeff? I went into this with a bad attitude. I really did, because Liam Neeson hasn't been good in a movie in quite some time. So I got to say, I was very pleased to watch In the Land of Saints and Sinners. This is directed by Robert Lorenz and co-stars Academy Award nominee Carrie Condon. It's the story of a hitman who you know, kind of gets by on a daily basis by reminding himself that he only kills bad people. That's his thing, is that he only kills people who have done something to make them deserve it. So that's how he kind of lives with himself. He's got this very cool idea. There's a thing that he does when he kills people. He takes them into the forest. He has them dig their own grave. Then he shoots them and plants a tree on top of them in the forest, which I gotta say that I've never seen anything quite like that in a movie before. And I kind of hope there's nobody actually doing something like that.
Well, you know, he should plant an endangered plant species, because then it would be illegal to dig it up. Just a thought.
Just a thought. He's about to retire. He wants to actually stop being a contract killer. And he gets dragged back into it because these four IRA terrorists end up in his small village. They're hiding out. They've accidentally killed a family, which there's this terrific opening sequence where these IRA people are planting a bomb in front of a bar. They see this family kind of just walking down the street and stop in front of the bar. And they're like, Carrie Condon's like trying to get them to move, get out of there. While also not trying to call attention to herself, because they don't want to get caught for planting the bomb. And it's a terrific Hitchcock sequence of, you know, you don't even need to see the bomb go off because you know in your mind what happened. It's a great piece of business. And then they end up in Liam Neeson's village. He doesn't know who they are, but one of them has been abusing a local kid, and so he steps in and takes care of that guy, and that leads to a showdown between him and the IRA. It actually is a really good movie. It's got kind of a dark sense of humor to it. Liam Neeson is not saddled with one of those terrible American accents that he does, so he's free to be a little bit looser and a little bit more engaged than he usually is. His last movie, like, he played a guy from Texas. Like, what the fuck is Liam Neeson doing playing a guy from Texas? Like, no.
God, remember his Marlowe?
God, that was miserable. Yeah, that was terrible. So it was really nice to see Liam Neeson get a chance to be flexible and actually seeming to enjoy himself on screen and seemingly having a good time, even in the midst of this kind of dark movie. And it's a dark film, but it's also quite a good film. I got to say, though, too, Carrie Condon as well. She, you know, Academy Award nominated for Banshees of Inisherin. She is such a great actress, and she is awesome in this movie. She is scary in this movie. She looks like her. She would just take you out in a second, she's one of the great things. A really good bad guy. They don't know that they're the bad guy. Like that, she's so committed to being who she is and working for the cause that she works for, that she doesn't see anything that she does as bad.
I love her, and I really was upset that I wasn't going to be able to see this because of her. Mm. I mean, if you remember when we talked about Night Swim, I hated that movie, but I loved her. Mm. She's just so good at stuff. You know, like, she's just natural. No matter what she's doing, and always knows who she is, who her character is, and who she is. Mm. So,
yeah, she's phenomenal, and she absolutely kills it in this movie. She's just so very, very good. And having her and, you know, Liam Neeson, they don't get many scenes together, but the scenes that they're in together are just charged with a lot of tension and suspense and violence, and it's really very exciting. But then you have a character played by Ciaran Hinds, who is kind of a comedy character almost. He plays the local police officer and Liam Neeson's friend, and it's kind of funny to watch them interact, because Hinds, he might know who his friend is, but he might not know, And then he becomes this very important, you know, cog in the machine of the plot later on. And you still buy it because he's got such gravitas as an actor. And he sells it so well that, you know, you might think of him as a bumbling fool, but he's kind of a bumbling fool with a purpose.
Hmm.
I love this movie a lot more now, even though I'm talking about it. It's just, it really is very good. And naturally, of course, this will be the one Liam Neeson movie that nobody goes to see.
Oh, no, that was already Marlowe. God, I hated that movie. It came up when I was going to finish a series on Shudder, and it came up on my Prime. It's like the featured thing today all day. And I'm like, oh, come on. Why would you feature this piece of crap?
Yeah. Yeah, it did not do well at the box office over the weekend.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Well, but that, I feel like
it really did.
I feel like these kind of movies, they're not made for, you know, like Easter weekend to go up. You know, they're counter programming, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the sisters to The Force Awakens kind of thing.
Yeah.
If you know, your husband wants to go see Godzilla X Kong, you go see this Liam Neeson movie because he was cute in Suspect or whatever.
I highly recommend In the Land of Saints and Sinners. I think people need to see this movie. Give it a chance. It's quite good. Just the good suspense, good action, good thrills, and a smart movie on top of all of that. All right, not a smart movie. Now, Jeff, I must correct you. The X in Godzilla X Kong is silent, just so you know. It's just okay. Godzilla Kong.
Godzilla Kong.
Godzilla Kong, the New Empire, in case you forgot, there's a subtitle here as well.
Wait, it's not Frozen Empire?
That was Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but there's better like Frozen effects in this one than there were in that.
Sure, whatever you say. Godzilla Kong is the latest MonsterVerse movie. It's just a lot of colors going past the screen really fast. And like, was this movie made by AI? Asking for a friend.
However,
it might as well have been. The plot here has, you could just smell the marketing bullshit going on here. Like, it's a team-up movie in the MonsterVerse. Oh, fuck off and die.
I gotta correct you. This movie does not have a plot. It has an elevator pitch.
And that's just what I described there. It's a team-up movie in the MonsterVerse. It's just got marketing stink all over it, doesn't it?
Okay, so I may or may not have watched this where I wasn't supposed to because I was sick all weekend. I did try to watch this Friday at the height of my, like, delirium while I was laying in bed sick from work. And I don't know what, like, medicine I was on or what was going on, but I just could not understand what was happening. So I tried to watch it again today, and I just could not understand what was happening. It was just like, let's make animatics for these set pieces that we're going to do where we're going to fill in the plot later, like we do with all, you know, like most big blockbusters. And then they forgot to put the plot in.
The whole first act of the movie is basically Godzilla has a toothache. Or no, Donkey or King Kong has a toothache.
Yeah.
So we call in Dan Stevens' character, whose character is Hawaiian shirt, and he comes in and puts like a steel stud in King Kong's mouth, and that's how that worked.
His first step to Bionic Kong. That's what I kept calling him, was Bionic Kong.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I mean, okay, I'm going to say this. If I had gone to see this in the theater, it probably would have been better to me.
I can assure you it's not.
Well, to me, I said.
Okay.
Sometimes you just want stupid set pieces. Okay. Sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
However, I literally could not remember a thing about the last one.
Yeah, no, there's nothing to remember.
There was nothing to it. And I don't, I saw this just 2 hours ago. I finished this. And I listened to a podcast about it. And I still like struggle to remember what was going on. It left me with so many questions. Like, how is there a sun in Hollow Earth? And how is there a Hollow Earth inside of a Hollow Earth? Is it like a Russian nesting doll of Earth?
There's like the King Kong lives in the Hollow Earth, which they discovered, I think, at the end of the last one. And they took Kong there to get him away from Godzilla so Godzilla wouldn't kill him.
Yeah.
And he's like down there looking for other Kongs, which I guess we find out do exist. And those Kongs want to come to Earth via the portals. Which, why are there portals? I don't know. I don't understand how the Hollow Earth works, I guess.
Neither do the filmmakers.
So they want to use the portals to go up to the surface Earth. There are people in Hollow Earth who I guess are in charge of Hollow Earth, and they put out a signal that only a child can hear and Godzilla can hear. And it calls Godzilla to go there, and Godzilla goes there, and the Kongs that want to escape, like one of them escapes along with his Kong, which is like a freezing Kong instead of a fire Kong. No, Godzilla.
Godzilla, yeah.
Whatever. I don't know which Godzilla is the freezing one. Does it have a name?
I don't remember the name of it.
Let's call him Freezy Freezerson. Yeah. Freezy Freezerson Zilla. He's like operated by like a crystal waved around by the big bad Kong, which I don't know his name either. He doesn't want to be a bad guy. Freezy Freezerson doesn't want to be a bad guy, but he has to be because he's controlled by the crystal, you see. You imagine there's a screenwriter just trying to, just like, yeah, that's what's going on. We got the Freezezilla over there. He's controlled by the crystal, by the Kong, and then they're going to fight each other, Transformers style.
Oh my God. I was struck by, so this white dragon Godzilla with Freezy Freezerson was directly lifted out of one of the Harry Potter movies with the dragon that lives under Gringotts. And they chain him and they beat him with chains. And every time he hears the bell, he reacts and runs away because he's used to the pain. And that's exactly what the Scar Kong does to this Freezy McFreezerson to get him to do his bidding. And I'm like, they are like, oh God, we need something else. I just watched that Harry Potter movie with the white dragon underneath Gringotts. Let's do that. Nobody cares. Nobody will notice.
Nobody cares. We certainly don't care. As the makers of this film, we don't give a fuck. Brian Tyree Henry is in this movie. He was in the last movie too. How does somebody remain this surprised by everything that he sees? Like, you saved the world in the last movie, dude. How can you remain this surprised by things that you see? It's not possible. At a certain point, his brain has to recall some of this information.
Exactly. Yeah, so this movie is just random thoughts thrown up on the screen.
I thought I was getting out of this one. I thought when Apple TV announced that they were doing like a MonsterVerse series, I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. Good. They're going to move those to Apple. I'd never have to see this shit again. Yep. Oh, how naive I was.
And especially after we got the like superb Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah.
It was on my top 10 list.
Yeah, that was a really good movie. They totally made this movie. Not only is this movie bad, it's just irrelevant on top of everything else.
You know, and I get that, like, these movies are just disaster porn. You know, I mean, you want to see Godzilla smash stuff and whatever, but why does a portal open up the base of the Giza pyramids? You know, it couldn't happen in, like, Montana.
They seem to be just randomly fucking placed. I mean,
yeah.
Or Brazil. What did Brazil ever do to anybody? Like, the entire of Brazil gets destroyed in this movie.
Yeah. I thought it might have been funny if they had, like, toppled the Jesus statue on Good Friday. then the dentist could have rebuilt it on the third day.
Apparently, I just looked this up. Dan Stevens is not in any of the other movies, even though they act like he's always been there. Everybody just acts like this character who's like King Kong's doctor is suddenly he's just been. They act like he's been a character the whole time. This is the first movie he's been in. With the
they hint that him and Rebecca Hall had a thing in college, but they never consummate it because they're not sure if they want him back for the next one.
They can't make more of these. No. Oh my God. This movie is so terrible. I hate it a lot. It's not even a movie. It's like a Transformers movie, but somehow not nearly as bad, but because I hate Transformers movies far more, but this is like a Transformers movie. I mean, the ending, especially the final act, is just them punching each other. There's the monsters punching each other, while Rebecca Hall looks nervous occasionally, and Dan Stevens wears a Hawaiian shirt.
Oh God!
Like, why do I get? Nathan Rabin, who's one of my favorite writers in the world, he's just incredible. He wrote a piece saying that it was a negative review for the most part, but he said he liked the movie because he watched it while stoned. And that certainly improves, it elevates the experience of watching one of these movies if you're high. Which, God. I gotta agree, it's probably the only way anyone could possibly enjoy this shit is if you're stoned out of your mind.
I mean, he's not wrong. But even at, you know, even delirious on like cold meds, I didn't enjoy it. So he could be wrong.
You need some weed, man. You need weed and an IMAX to enjoy this. I just don't understand. It says something terrible about us as a culture that this movie is the second highest grossing film of the year already.
I mean, but
people rushed out to see this movie. $80 million over nearly $200 million worldwide on opening weekend. It's second only to Dune in terms of money gross this year. And it says a lot that this is the movie that people were like, yes, I need to see this in a theater.
Well, like I said, it would have probably been better in the theater because it would have been so big I couldn't have seen or understood what was going on.
The only lasting effect I think I'm going to have from this movie is that I sat a little too close to a speaker and my hearing is a little damaged in my right ear now. That's about it.
Nice.
It's really the only takeaway from this movie. And that if you're a screenwriter, you can just assign a character a Hawaiian shirt and call it a character.
Well, that is development for some characters.
Because, you know, if you give a guy a Hawaiian shirt, he's kind of wacky. You know, he's going to be the party guy. He's going to do crazy stuff because he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt and nobody can tell him what to do. He doesn't confine. He's not confined to your societal norms. He's wearing a Hawaiian shirt. Oh my god. Somebody watched an episode of MASH. Thought, that's a character. He's the shirt, not the guy. It's the shirt. Oh my god. There's the other.
Are we done talking about this stupid movie?
That's the last thing memory of this movie is Dan Stevens' Hawaiian shirt.
Was that his, I never checked IMDb. Was that his character's name?
I think so. God, I hate this fucking movie. Any final thoughts on Godzilla Kong Frozen Empire?
Nope. And it's. I see what you did there. But no.
Hidden Empire. No, I don't remember what it's called. Something Empire.
With it's Hidden Empire, but it looks more like Frozen Empire.
No, it's New Empire. It's the Empire okay. Strikes Back.
The Hidden Frozen Empire that struck back.
Oh, god damn, what a piece of shit. All right, that's all the new movies this week. Jeff, would you like to introduce the classic?
Yes, the classic this week is from On a Clear Day You Can See Forever, starring Barbara Streisand and Yves Montand.
Starring the Mecha Streisand from
yes.
That's a tie in with the other movie.
Stop. Yeah. Stop.
Oh my god, it's Mecha Streisand.
Should I just do the rest of the show? It's Carmen. On a clear day, you can see forever. It's on Mecha Streisand and Yves Montand. Oh, don't worry, I won't do that. But if I did decide to do that, what would you do? Would you be into it?
No one can stop you. You're wearing a Hawaiian shirt. No one can stop you.
Yes, this is true. This is true. Oh my god. Now I want to go get my one Hawaiian shirt that I got for.
Is it Tommy Bahama?
No, it's fucking Walmart because I wasn't paying Tommy Bahama prices. Oh. Okay, so
we're off
our
the
classic
rail.
Is On a Clear Day You Can See Forever from 1970, starring Barbara Streisand and Yves Montand, directed by Vincent Minnelli. Barbara Streisand plays a troubled young woman. She goes to a psychotherapist to help her quit smoking via hypnosis. And starts reliving a tragic Victorian romance, either from her past life or just a suggestion. And part of the movie is trying to decide if she's been reincarnated as somebody else. Barbara plays Daisy Gamble, who is gorgeous in this movie. And Yves Montand plays Dr. Marc Chabot, or as she thinks of him as Shabbat. And they go back and forth, and she's auditing his class, and he hypnotizes another student, but she's so suggestible that she becomes hypnotized. And then this leads her to say, hey, can you hypnotize me to stop smoking? And he ends up accidentally regressing her to her past lives. So
that's what happened. Okay, good. I thought I was following it.
Yeah.
Now, Barbara is incredibly charming in this movie. She really is. The way she bounces between characters and the stories that she's telling, and the fact that it's just her and Yves Montand for so much time in the movie, it's quite impressive how dynamic that story feels with just two actors in a single room, telling each other's stories essentially. That said, if I've got one criticism of this movie is that it shouldn't be 2 hours long. This should be a 90 yeah. minute kind of frothy, fun vehicle, and it goes on way too long.
Well, it's based on a stage musical,
mm-hmm.
And I think that it was originally, this was supposed to be a 3-hour road picture.
Wow.
With an intermission and, an overture and all that. But by 1970, those were kind of going out of fashion. Mm-hmm. So they did cut some of the stuff. and then kind of rejiggered a few things for being a movie instead of a play or musical. You know, they dropped some songs. They Yves Montand, he sings a song that I don't think was originally his. They added the Jack Nicholson character of Tad.
Well, I liked a lot. I mean, just for a guy to be in so few scenes and to make such a big impression, you can tell why Nicholson is Nicholson. He's just, he makes you just want to see him whenever he does. That's so, it's so impressive.
The scene between him and, I can't remember his name, who was, her fiance.
that was funny.
That was great. He was Jack Nicholson fully formed in that scene.
I'm here to take your girls and there's nothing you can do about it. Exactly.
Now one of the things that I really liked about it was the supporting cast. I mean, Barbra Streisand, I when I listened to her autobiography, I wanted to kind of go through and watch her old movies that I've never seen, because I was never a Streisand gay. Now I am.
That's just something that happens over time for gay people.
I guess. She just is so arresting. And I never thought of her as a great beauty until I started watching her on screen, actually act in Funny Girl and this, and you know, her earlier movies. I'm just like, oh, okay. She's the whole package. You know, Bob Newhart is in this movie and he's only in a couple scenes, but he steals them both because he's being he's Bob Newhart. Simon Oakland, who was he was in the Kolchak movies and TV show, and he was also the psychiatrist who explains about Norman Bates at the end of Psycho.
Nice.
He's really good in it. Everybody is just they're very good. I think you're right. I think they could have cut the music.
Frankly, Yves Montand does a song late that just goes on forever. Yes. You could cut 3 minutes out of the movie and not even lose that song entirely.
All of the songs that they sing in the movie could have been just short snippets of dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have ended up saving yourself about a half an hour.
Yeah. Come Back to Me is the song, and it just needs to go. It needs to go.
definitely. He's not a great singer anyway, in my opinion. You know, I could see her doing an album. This was her actually released. This is a soundtrack album. It was her lowest selling album of her career. Yeah. And it just doesn't need to be a musical. I think it would have been, more of a fun, kind of frothy Marilyn Monroe kind of comedy if they'd taken the music out.
Definitely. You know, and if this were 87 minutes, we'd be talking about a really great comedy.
Yeah. Well, have you seen The Owl and the Pussycat with her and George Segal?
No.
That works as just a comedy. I mean, it's fun, and we as modern audiences can watch it and say, oh, this is, I've seen this a million times, but it's that kind of movie that did it first, and I think if they had cut the music out and done more along the lines of what The Owl and the Pussycat did, then I think it would have been a little better.
Absolutely. I think there's no question about that. Anything that would make this movie shorter is going to improve it. But there's something to be said, though, for the amount of charisma and comic timing that Streisand has just by herself. Mm-hmm. It's shocking because you don't because her modern, you know, persona is not this. It's not being this. It's like, you know, the Streisand of the 90s and into today is a sort of a self-serious parody, whereas the Streisand of 1970 that, you know, I didn't experience, I'm not sure you didn't experience it really, she was an incredibly dynamic performer, like a Reese Witherspoon almost.
Yeah. Yeah, I can actually see Reese Witherspoon in almost of any of the movies that I've seen of her early career. I don't know if Reese Witherspoon can sing, but
I mean, if she could make a version of this movie that you wouldn't need the singing.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's
this movie without the singing, you're right.
Yeah. If you made this just a straight comedy, 8 out of 10 stars.
I agree. Yeah. There's enough chemistry between her and Eve Montan. It's a clever idea where they use the flashbacks of her reincarnated self incredibly well. I loved Streisand bounces between two different scenes as two different characters. And I know it's the editing, obviously, is part of that, but it's just so seamless the way she pulls it all together in the performance. You couldn't make that edit work if she weren't mirroring herself so perfectly from these three different outfits that she's wearing and these three different time. There's like she's part of two different trials playing this character in the past that, of course, herself in Eve Montan's office. That's just a great piece of work.
You know, when she does that transition and she starts, you know, speaking with an English accent and it just... She kind of goes into it a little bit at a time, and then her last line, and then she hears herself later on tape doing that. The look on her face where she's just so shocked, she doesn't know what to even think.
Mm-hmm.
And then she realizes that, oh, he's in love with her, not me. And I may or may not have been this other woman, you know, 200 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The look on her face when she realizes all that, you don't even need to have it like explained to you. You know what I mean? You don't have they don't have to spell it out. Just the look on her face tells you. One thing I also really thought was cool is when she's playing the orphan, her as a little girl, she's playing her and you believe it because they cast all these actors and actresses who are well over 6 feet tall. And you don't, at first you're like, oh, you know, did they just find a girl who looks like her? Nope. They just got all these really tall actors and actresses.
It really is. It's just, it's clever and funny. And when it's not stopping for these lengthy, lengthy songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take the music away. 8 out of 10.
As it is, I can kind of recommend it if you're like a hardcore Streisand fan. Like, she's a great singer, obviously, and you know, she certainly can make these songs work. On stage, I'm sure it's spectacular. But movies are a different medium, and I don't think these songs play nearly as well in this medium.
Mm-hmm. I recommend it just to watch her performance, just the way that she, you know. She goes between the two characters from scene to scene and within the same scene. That's a reason that she's won Oscars.
Mm-hmm. She's an incredible actress and she doesn't get the credit she deserves. I think because people get caught up in the persona and the big blustery songs.
Yeah.
All right. Let's get on to, let's see, next week, of course, it's all about The Omen. Omen movies. We'll talk about Monkey Man. I know I'm going to see Monkey Man for sure because I'm really excited for what Dev Patel is doing with that. But The Omen is going to be next week's show for the most part. We'll watch as many of those as we can, right?
Yep.
Even that awful Leaf Schreiber remake. Oh, God.
Oh, well, that's going to be my last priority.
All right. Let's get on to Flick Chart. The Hunger Games, Mockingjay Part 1 or Jurassic Park 3?
Mockingjay.
Absolutely. No question. Jurassic Park 3 is terrible. Rocky IV or Red Eye?
Red Eye.
Red Eye, definitely. Sorry, Bob.
Totally underrated.
Red Eye is a really good movie. People need to see Red Eye. Top Secret with Val Kilmer or The Man Who Fell to Earth with David Bowie?
The Man Who Fell to Earth.
I agree, although Top Secret is very funny.
Yes, it is.
All right, let's see here. Blood Diamond or The Simpsons Movie?
The Simpsons Movie.
Agreed, yeah. Blood Diamond, no.
It's just too preachy to me. And the only thing I liked about it was Jimon Hounsou.
Yeah, yeah. The Good Son with Macaulay Culkin or Brooklyn with Saoirse Ronan?
Brooklyn's a better movie. I do like The Good Son, though.
Brooklyn is quite good, yes. Sorry.
Oh, Lord.
I love this. The Remains of the Day or Lake Placid?
Lake Placid.
Lake Placid all the way.
It has one of the funniest lines ever committed to film. If I had a dick, this is where I'd tell you to suck it, said by Betty White. When she died, I gotta do some art. I gotta do something with Betty White. And instead of a Golden Girls one, because I've done a lot of those, mm-hmm. that's what I picked, is if I had a dick, this is where I'd tell you to suck it.
The Remains of the Day is still a meme on the 94 podcast because we just,
yes.
we hate that movie so much. I swear to God, the only people that like The Remains of the Day are people who just like to pretend that they're like smarter than everybody else by saying that they like a movie like The Remains of the Day. No, you don't. No. You like to have The Remains of the Day like a coffee table book that makes you look smarter by comparison. Like, oh, this person's very, very erudite. They like Remains of the Day. No, you don't. No mm-hmm. one likes that movie. No one does.
Exactly.
Revolver with Jason Statham or Idiocracy?
Idiocracy.
Yeah, I mean, Revolver's kind of disappointing. Let's see. I don't think I've never seen The Octagon. Have you seen The Octagon?
No.
No. Shooter with Mark Wahlberg or Meteor Man with Robert Townsend?
Meteor Man.
Yeah, Shooter's pretty bad. Star Trek Insurrection or Coach Carter with Samuel L. Jackson?
Say the first one again. You kind of cut out.
Star Trek Insurrection.
I don't care.
I'm going Coach Carter. Star Trek Insurrection, interestingly enough for us, is the first movie that showed at our local theater.
Really?
They changed locations, yeah. The very first opening weekend there, 1998.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Let's see. Blazing Saddles or Nightmare Alley? That's a good one. Wow. I don't know where to go Ooh. On that.
Which Nightmare Alley? The original or the remake?
The Peter Jackson, or that, sorry, Guillermo del Toro.
God, that movie is so beautiful. I honestly don't know which one to pick. Can we tie?
I would have taken Nightmare Alley and just take the pressure off of you.
Okay.
All right. Contagion from Steven Soderbergh or Society?
Oh. Oh. God, Society is so fucked up.
I hate Society. I hate it every second.
I know. I know you do, but I have a soft spot for the face coming out of the ass. But no, I'm going to pick Contagion. I almost watched that last night.
Contagion?
Yeah.
What a weird movie to just watch randomly.
Well, I was going through something to like fall asleep to, and I was like, I don't think I could watch that when I'm sick.
Sing, the animated film, or Radio, which is Cuba Gooding Jr. going full word we can't say. All I know is that Tropic Thunder gets it right. Never go full that.
Yes.
And Cuba Gooding Jr. did.
I think that, yeah.
Thing, obviously, yes. Radio is a terrible film. It's really an embarrassment. It's really embarrassing. Evil Dead 2 or End of Watch with Jake Gyllenhaal?
End of Watch.
Really? Oh, it's Evil Dead 2 by a lot for me.
I don't care about the Evil Dead movies. I'm sorry.
Wow.
I saw the first one. Cool. I saw the second one. Oh, it's just the first one with a bit of budget. Okay, cool. I appreciate the Evil Dead movies. They're just not something that I go and watch.
Hmm. Evil Dead wins. Snow White and the Huntsman or The Land Before Time?
Neither. I don't think I ever, I may have seen The Land Before Time. I don't remember because I never would have watched it again if I did.
Fair enough. Vampire's Kiss or Office Christmas Party?
Vampire's Kiss.
Yeah, it's just an iconic Nicolas Cage performance, isn't it?
Yeah.
Adventures of Sharkboy and Lava Girl or Jerry Maguire?
Jerry Maguire.
Yeah. Little Shop of Horrors or the Peanuts movie?
Are we talking the musical Little Shop?
1986.
Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah.
I love that fucking movie. But I can't watch it because then every time I do, I get the Don't Feed the Plant song in my head.
Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice or Apocalypse Now?
Apocalypse Now.
Yeah. Although, again, we're the only podcast that likes Batman versus Superman.
I don't mind about. So I always watch zombie movies on Easter, and I was watching the Zack Snyder the Dawn of the Dead remake. That is like his only great movie.
You can see that. Yeah, I can't really think of anything else of his I like. So,
like, if you're forced to watch a Zack Snyder movie for the rest of your life once a day, you can pick any one of them. That's the one I would pick. I could not get through all the end of them or the any of the other of them with like every day.
Mm.
So,
all right, Saw or The Wild Bunch?
I've never seen The Wild Bunch.
Really? Oh, wow.
I just never have, yeah.
Hmm. Okay. I took Saw.
Okay.
All right. You should see The Wild Bunch. Really highly recommend. Captain Phillips or Little Children?
Little Children.
By a lot. That is an incredible movie. Five Nights at Freddy's or Double Team with Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dennis Rodman?
Double Team.
Double Team, absolutely.
Double Team. I don't even like that movie. I never, you just watch Jean-Claude Van Damme movies for maybe a butt shot, but would watch that over Five Nights at Freddy's any other time. So
true that. Whatever Happened to Baby Jane or From Dusk Till Dawn?
Whatever Happened to Baby Jane? She can sing.
No doubt.
Yeah, oh God, I love that movie so much. I never get tired of that movie. Have we done it as a classic before?
No, we haven't.
That has got to be on the roster this year because it's a great movie to talk about.
Mortal Kombat Annihilation or The Shootist with John Wayne?
I obviously am going to pick Mortal Kombat. No, I'm just kidding. The Shootist. God.
I'm loath to pick a John Wayne movie, but I'll pick.
Well, yeah, but
Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds or Jaws the Revenge?
Oh, God. I mean, it's obviously Free Guy because Jaws the Revenge. Come on.
There's a comedy watch to Jaws the Revenge that I can appreciate, but Free Guy isn't a bad enough movie for me to go to go that direction with it. If we're up against a truly bad movie, I might be willing to pick Jaws the Revenge as kind of a so bad it's fun kind of thing.
Yeah. What was I going to? Oh, I just. The novelization of Jaws the Revenge apparently has that the shark is controlled by ESP or something like that. I just got to get that book because I got to find out what the fuck is going on.
Jeff, did you know they're making another Bad Boys movie? Or they've made it and it's coming out?
I knew that, but I'm not going to watch it.
I literally just found out about that this week. And anyway, Bad Boys for Life or Little Fockers? which late period sequel is worse or better, I guess?
Little Fockers, because it's got Barbara in it.
Yeah, yeah. White Chicks or Friday the 13th Part 2?
Friday the 13th Part 2.
No doubt. I wish he would kill the White Chicks, honestly. Michael Clayton with George Clooney or The Last Emperor?
God, I don't.
It's a no-brainer for me. I'm taking Michael Clayton. I found The Last Emperor to be tedious.
Is that the one with Christian Bale?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just trying to think if I even saw it.
It's tedious. We watched it on its 30th anniversary, and we were just like, why did this win Best Picture? This is so boring. It's like The Remains of the Day is telling this movie to get moving. All right. Let's see. Got to come to something that's going to wrap us up here, but let's see what we have here. Dr. Doolittle, 1967, or 50 Shades of Grey. What if you combine those two movies?
Oh, my God. If the animals talked and all they said was, spank me, doctor. Spank me, Dr. Doolittle. Spank me hard. Oh,
God.
Would you like to see my pleasure?
What have I wrought upon the world?
I mean, you asked.
End scene. Thank you, Jeff.
Thanks.